Welcome to G&D Spotlight, the podcast where we shine a light on the ever-evolving world of security tech. I'm Jessica Antonacci, marketing for US Paytech, and today we are joined by G&D's Akshay Burikku and InGroup's Christian Sorensen. Akshay is a global lead, go-to-market for digital solutions at G&D, focusing on driving the global expansion of payment and banking solutions. An engineer turned go-to-market strategist, he specializes in product positioning, consumer psychology, sales enablement, and scalable growth strategies. He works cross-functionally to align product market fit, execute go-to-market strategies, and equip sales with high-impact narratives. Christian serves as head of products at InGroup, a leading global player in digital identity. He is a respected expert in the designation of finance and fintech. Spanning two decades, he has consulted leading financial service industry players on strategy, trends, and technologies, helping them navigate the ever-changing digital landscape. He has a deep knowledge and experience with digital wallets across the world. He has established himself as a fintech thought leader and seasoned speaker at international conferences. Today, we're talking about Apple's expanded NFC access for third-party wallet apps on iPhones and its potential implications. I'll now hand it over to Akshay.
Yeah, thank you so much, Jessica. And yeah, again, thanks for joining us, Christian. So I think if I remember it correctly, I've known you since 4 years now. And I believe the first time we met, we shared the same interest in the world of payments and bankings, but also the world of psychology and consumer behavior. And I believe now, today, NFC and digital wallet is the topic, but I've at least in a few of the conferences we have been looking that we certainly saw wallets from the wallets proliferation and then wallet consolidation and cases like, would there be one wallet to rule them all? Would there be a super wallet model or wallet interoperability? So again, I think we, at least I know you from that side, but can you tell us a little more about yourself and perhaps what brought you today to this current role? And along this fantastic journey in the payments and banking world, what were the key moments that you heard and what are the future exciting things that you already see in your line of work?
Oh, thank you, Akshay, and indeed great to be here. Quite a few questions in your opening statement here, so let me try to address as many of those as I remember and then pick up on the ones that I may have skipped. So let's start with how on earth did I end up spending my life on wallets? That was not by design. It was not conscious choice that I made in my youth that I want to focus on wallets. It was quite accidental in a way. I started working with digital services already when I was at university in the mid 90s. In 94, the first graphical browser Mosaic had come into the market, and I was studying communication and psychology, and I thought that okay, this new internet will change the way we communicate, and it will also potentially change the way we are as human beings. So I focused my studies, both my communication studies and psychology studies, on the digitization and the internet as such, and thereby positioned myself in the midst of the early .com days. As it turned out, when I graduated, the only ones who were hiring, I graduated just after the .com bust, it was the financial sector. So I was hired by one of the largest Danish banks to help them build their online banking solution. And I'll try to make a long story short, but online banking led to other online financial services and mobile financial services, which again led to mobile payments. So I was part of the very early days of mobile payment solutions and also part of some of the early day wallet work. And most notably as part of Mobay Forum, a global organization for mobile financial services, an organization that GND has also been part of for many years. And already back in 2011, we published in MOBAE the first of now many mobile and digital wallet reports. The most recent report came out just a few weeks ago. So through MOBAE Forum, I've been following the digital wallets across the world quite intensively. I've also in across now many different jobs have been involved either directly or indirectly in actually more than 10 more than 30 digital wallets across the globe. So it has and it's definitely been an interesting journey. In terms of highlights over these years, I would say that one thing that really stood out was when the first time we saw what would eventually be known as HCE, host card emulation. Up until that, we had been trying to get the whole ecosystem to work by combining forces from the banking side of things, payment side of things, with the telcos to gain access to the secure elements of the SIM cards, or with mobile phone providers to get access to the secure element of the phone. All in all, pretty cumbersome process, which had a lot of promise, but the complexities made it so that it never really took off. And I remember we were sitting in San Francisco when at a MOBAE Forum event where I think it was Bank Inter with what was then known as Bell ID who presented what they call secure element in the cloud, which was pretty much the invention of HCE. And that really sort of broke the chain of dependencies between the telcos and the banks, and that also paved the way for the whole Google Wallet, and that really started opening up and accelerating the development. So that was definitely one of those pivotal moments in the development of at least payment wallets. And more recently, of course, the announcement of eIDAS 2 and in Europe with the ambition to have digital identity wallets that could also serve as payment wallets is definitely also something that I see as a major moment that will catalyze and develop wallets in the future and for years to come. I think that was, please let me know if there's something I skipped of your questions.
Oh, no, I think most of them are definitely covered. And I think you, in your conversation, raised a point where HCE was available, and that was for Android. And for the iOS, there was still a workaround, but there were financial institutions who said, sure, fine, Android works for us, but predominantly most of them were still looking at a fragmented customer base and were not willing to do it. And that of course, now brings me to another question is with this recent NFC shift, we now see global variations in the NFC implementation. There were certain which were regulatory driven and certain which were voluntary by Apple itself. So if you could just walk us through from your experience, what you have seen so far, what are the different types of the NFC implementation that are open up now, and which sort of use cases are in the first one, which I think you mentioned around HCE, and which extra features use cases would then be opening doors for the secure element part?
Yeah. Good question, because there is not a simple answer to it, because like so many other good questions, it will be a that depends answer, because there is definitely from Europe and EU, there's been a constant and ongoing pressure towards Apple to open up their infrastructure and open up access to the ecosystem. for payments, because we have to keep in mind that that it's not that Apple has completely blocked the NFC antenna. So you can use the Apple NFC antenna to read a passport, for instance. So reading the chip in a passport, you can do that on an iPhone. But NFC for payments has been sort of blocked and only been available through Apple Pay. Which, of course, in countries like mine here in Denmark, where you have a very high market share of iPhones, that has put Apple in a quite dominant position when it has come to mobile payment wallets. Much to the regret of the banks who had their dreams of having their own payment wallets, but they didn't really succeed with it, mainly due to the fact that they could only serve the Android part of the population. We did see wallets out there that were leveraging Bluetooth, BLE, for payments on iPhones, but the customer experience was not really on par with the experience that that the Apple Wallet could provide. So it didn't really take off. So in Europe, we had this big regulatory regulator push towards Apple, which eventually made Apple open up for access to the NFC antenna, not to the secure element, but to the NFC antenna for players in Europe, or in EU to be more specific. In other markets, other jurisdictions outside of EU, Apple has also chosen to open up, actually both for the antenna and for the secure element, but for a fee. So within EU, banks and other providers can now access the NFC antenna, but not the secure element, but they can do that for free. And outside, they can access, but it comes with a cost to Apple to do so.
Thank you. And I think I remember recently in this secure element countries, Switzerland was recently added to the list. So I believe that a few more countries, depending upon how Apple sees, would be added to the list.
Yes, exactly. It's a growing list from Apple's side where they've launched this possibility for companies to buy access to the secure element and the NFC antenna.
Thank you. And I think now this actually lays a good ground for my another question that I actually wanted your insights on. So, like you said, we saw that Apple opened up the NFC, which is the HCE part within the EEA, European Economic Area. And then we saw that beyond the initial requirements of the EU regulators, they opened in the other parts of the world. And I mean, I've been reading a few opinions here and there, articles here and there, which says that Apple is way ahead in this race. Now, there may not likely be a strong competition or a genuine competition. What is your take on this based on the things you see around?
Yeah, I think it is difficult if you want to compete with a like-for-like offering, because if we are only talking about card payments, the best you can offer leveraging the access to the NFC antenna is something that is close to or similar to the Apple Pay experience. But that said, that is what we are seeing in Norway, where the local champion P2P wallet Vipps has been the first third-party wallet to leverage the NFC antenna, but only for initially for the domestic scheme in Norway, bank accept. Because they had that implementation ready. They are, of course, also planning to support both Visa and MasterCard in this setting. But it was definitely an option to get the domestic scheme on par with the international schemes. I have not seen any numbers from Norway because actually at the same time, the Norwegian banks, or at least the bigger Norwegian banks, also started offering Apple Pay to their customers. And so the big question is, will people, will consumers choose one over the other? If the experience is similar, they probably won't change their behavior if they are already using Apple Pay. So the question is, what will change user behavior? And that is probably a broader question than just card payments.
I think you've perfectly summed it up how the market is reacting to this. And when I say market, and I see the financial ecosystem, and with this NFC access, there are many players from card issuers, fintech companies, QR-based wallets, loyalty card programs. And now, from your standpoint, do you see potential ripple effects in other tech ecosystems, other players apart from the issuers that stand to benefit from it? And then, in your perspective, which ones would that be?
Yeah, I mean, in parallel with the discussions about various payment wallets, mobile payment wallets, there has also been all of this discussions about payment rails. So we see a strong development in account-based payments rather than the card-based payments, and I think many of these are seeing renewed interest for many reasons. For the past few years, it has been about cost effectiveness and also potentially increased flexibility to use account-based rails rather than card-based. But more recently, and very recently, we even see a geopolitical aspect that is quite interesting. In the light of recent event, we see in Europe a growing interest for non-American services, including when it comes to payments. And I think that will further accelerate and catalyze some of the both the local wallets that we see in many countries that are in many cases account driven, but also pan-European initiatives like Vero from EPI, which is certainly benefiting from the increased focus on sovereignty and resilience in Europe, also when it comes to payments. So there's the completely new set of discussions that weren't really here just 6 months ago. So things can change quickly sometimes, as we clearly see these days.
Absolutely. I think there are certain things that you have already addressed in it, and I would like to pick a few elements from there and maybe go a bit deeper into it. The first one, I think, that you expressed is for issuers, some of them were already having Apple Pay as offering to their customers, and now they are at the crossroads now that the NFC is open. What do we do? Do we offer our own and not the Apple one, or do we offer a hybrid approach? And at least from our side, I've seen a few customers who are having Apple Pay as it is, initiating their own offerings and then trying to give sort of incentives so that the customers could possibly adapt and they could get a critical mass. From your side, do you see the same way, that it's a kind of a hybrid approach where they are giving both options and then consumers are picking up? Or have you also seen a rather extreme case where a bank says that, hang on, there's a lot of, so to speak, money that we give to Apple just to make sure Apple Pay runs, and now on, we'll try to focus on our own bank-led Tap and Pay offering?
Yeah, to answer the last question first, no, I have not. I have yet to see a bank who has made that decision and switched off Apple Pay completely. Mm-hmm. I think the hybrid approach that you described is definitely something that that we see happening in the market, and I think. I think it also highlights the difference between different wallet types, basically, because even though we often praise Google Pay and Apple Pay as successful wallets, I mean, if you zoom out, they are very thin wallets in the way that they basically serve to hold a card and not much more than that. Of course, you have the boarding cards or loyalty cards and such, but it's basically just a card holder. and in many ways, the success metrics of these wallets are based on the fact that they do not cause any friction. They do not get in your way when you do a transaction. So you never open your Google Wallet or Apple Wallet just to open your wallet. Whereas the mobile banking app, which in for some banks is also marketed as a wallet, it's designed with a completely different purpose. It's designed to engage with the app as such, and offer functionality, dialogue, overview, analysis, a lot of things that is not directly linked to the reducing friction element of a pure play payment wallet. So having payments as an option in your more elaborate banking app or identity wallet app could make sense, so that similar to having your card on file across different services, you could have your card available through different wallets, and then you will pick the wallet you need based on the context, rather than having one wallet to rule them all and saying that, okay, I will always use this one wallet, come what may. I think I think we will see these more contextual wallets, so to speak, so that you pick the wallet you need, and depending on what you need it for.
Understood. Thank you. And I think in between, you also talked about identity-led wallets. And if I remember it correctly, for HCE, a part, it was predominantly transit, loyalty, payments. But when it comes to secure elements, there's this identity use case on top of it. And with these now 6-8 countries which have now NFC access open from Apple voluntarily, from your experience, do you see the identity-led use case being the prominent one where more developments and innovations are going to take place when it comes to future?
Yeah, I think similar to what we saw when the European Commission pushed the revised Payment Service Directive, PSD2, to catalyze open banking across Europe, we see a similar development now with the eIDAS 2, so the new digital identity regulation for Europe. And this time around, the Commission has been more prescriptive than they were with PSD2. PSD2 and open banking sort of suffered from the lack of standards, which created a bit of a fragmented market. So in order to not repeat the mistakes, and in order to accelerate the development towards a true inner market for digital identities, the Commission and the work groups working on the new digital identity wallet and the regulation eIDAS around it they have chosen a more prescriptive approach where more standards are enforced for implementation, and that means that now the clock is ticking, because every European or every EEA country will have to provide or at least certify an identity wallet for its citizens within the next 2 years, and that means that we are now seeing a lot of tenders in the market, a lot of movement in the market, but it's still early days, and most of the implementations we see are still in sort of pilot phase or early stage digital identity wallet phases. But there's no doubt in my mind that the identity wallets will play a central role in the ecosystem. That said, I don't think that the identity wallets will become the super apps of our daily life, but it will definitely be an enabler of many of the other services, including financial services, including payments that we as Europeans use all the time. So it will be a part of the ecosystem and definitely a part that can accelerate and catalyze other services, including financial services.
Absolutely. I think when you said that catalyzing many other services, this now brings me to a follow-up question that now I think you were already talking about players like Twint or Swish. And that brings me to a question that in regions where we have players like them, would an individual or a collaborative wallet be more sensible? Because I think we had this conversation earlier that there are regions where there are established players like Swish, Twint, and in such regions, would you see few banks who are more innovative and want to lead charge and say, no, I want to develop my own offering? Or are they more likely to succeed if they drop this individual-led offering and rather go for a collaborative wallet approach?
I think the collaborative approach is probably the most likely to succeed. And I think that many banks across Europe have seen just that, because it is the bank-led wallets that have succeeded to become the local champions. You already mentioned Twint from Switzerland, Swish from Sweden, Vipps from Norway, MobilePay in Denmark and Finland, Bizum in Spain, and apologies for all the ones that I forgot to mention. But all of these, what they have in common is that they are driven by banks. And that has provided a great element of trust into these wallets, and I think it's worth noticing how well established and well liked and even loved, back to the point about consumer behavior and consumer preferences, the brands of these, they score extremely high in some countries. They are the most loved brands. I mean, in Denmark, the MobilePay has outperformed Lego, which was otherwise one of our most treasured brands in Denmark. So the fact that you have a financial services brand that people all of a sudden love, even the most liked banks have never seen that level of love from consumers. So I think the banks behind these will definitely wish to continue to leverage that strong position in the market. At least that would be my clear advice to these banks.
And I think till now it was all about organizations and institutions and why they should act and how they should act now that NFC has opened. And now this brings to one of my favorite topics, and I'm also assuming it's yours, regarding consumer behavior and psychology. So for banks, I feel it is clear one of the roadblock here was monetary cost, because it's a fair share of amount that they hand over to Apple. And now in order to remain at the center of consumers' lives, they would want to also leverage this opportunity of NFC, be it now individual-led in certain regions, or be it a collaborative one where such established players already exist. But now coming to the a consumer like me, for example, who now is well-versed with this double tap and pay. Now, I'm just thinking, for me, it would rather be a mental cost to now suddenly open up the settings, go to the default and change the mode. So in terms of consumer adoption, from your experience, what do you see are the incentives or certain factors that you see certain bank-led offerings would try to do?
Yeah, it's a good question, because obviously consumers in general don't think about payments as much as you and I do. So you need to incentivize people in one way or the other. Of course, there are the traditional incentive models of cashbacks or loyalty points or special offers or whatever, but I I actually think that this the geopolitical aspects and go local rather than global could be one, but of course that would require a shift to another payment rails, because if you are replacing an international card in Google Apple Pay with an international card in a local wallet, then there's no real differentiator there. I also think that that another driver could be the uptake of merchant wallets as well. We see some merchants are building, I mean, they probably don't even call it wallets, but they have these shopping companion apps where you can do self-scan and you check in to the physical store with that what I would call a wallet, but with that app of that merchant, you'll get the targeted offers and then you might either use that wallet to pay by having a card in that wallet, and then you tap the POS, or you can actually do the in-app install payments, which of course is still a concern for some merchants, because that would constitute an e-commerce transaction, even though you are in a physical setting, which has held back some of these merchant wallets. But if the merchant wallets could be also the wallet that you use to do tap to pay, that could also be a driver for this. No, so yeah, maybe a long one winded answer, but what I guess you need different incentives depending on which country, which demography, and such you're trying to target.
I absolutely agree that, I mean, apart from the issuer-led wallet, the merchant ones are also standing to benefit from here. And I think in your conversation, you talked about payment rails. And now account-to-account payments are, of course, gaining traction globally with players like MasterCard, Visa, and others entering the space. But while, I mean, the NFC access addresses some of the technical barriers which are not there anymore with its opening, does acceptance still remain an issue for account to account particularly?
Yes, absolutely. I think it's people tend to overlook the whole acceptance side of payments, because as much as we have seen in terms of standardization on the issuing side and both the physical cards and the mobile payments as such, we have to remember there's an equal amount of standardization on the POS side of things. I've also had dialogues with the central banks about central bank digital currencies, where they have, which in many ways was eye-opening, because if central banks clearly knows a lot about money, but they know very little, apologies for the broad generalization, but they know very little about consumer payments. So I've literally seen people in central banks expecting that you could just sort of magically connect your phone to a POS device and then transfer money and completely overlooking the complexity of not just the POS device, but the whole integration behind the POS device. So of course, the most of the current POS devices are tightly coupled to the card rails. But as we see more development on these POS kernels, the technology in the POS that handles the acceptance, I think we will see a growth in alternative acceptance and thereby enabling account-to-account rails. Yeah, we also see, but that of course deviates from the whole topic of NFC. That of course some providers skip the whole NFC part and use the more sophisticated POSs to display a QR code instead, completely bypassing the NFC.
Oh no, absolutely. I think like you expressed that certain do not even leverage NFC and they use QR and. Now that we are talking about sidetracking from the core topic, I think now we are at a portion of what we call rapid fire questions or trends in the industry. And that's where maybe I would ask Jessica to chip in.
So we will now do our fun rapid fire questions. So the first question is, third party providers leveraging NFC outside Apple Pay, is it a game changer or a little bit too late?
It's a game changer, but not necessarily the game that we originally set out to change.
All right. Second, banks creating their own contactless payment systems, a smart move or unnecessary competition?
Unnecessary if they try to do it on their own, smart move if they do it together.
All right. NFC-powered digital IDs and authentication, the future or a security nightmare?
Both. I think we definitely need to make sure that one thing is technology and security, another thing is consumer behavior and security. So just as we have taught people to pay securely, we need to teach people to identify securely.
Retailers adopting more direct NFC payments, a win for merchants or another fragmentation problem?
Again, both definitely a win, but also a win that comes with the price of added complexity.
All right. So Apple still controlling aspects of NFC access, a reasonable security measure or a restrictive tactic?
That must be restrictive tactics because obviously there are many skilled providers in the market. And we have, of course, auditors and regulators ensuring that that security is at a sufficiently high standard.
All right. And the last one, I think this was an Akshay provided question. So an AI opener, putting AI sauce on every payment and banking field. So AI in everything, is it good or bad?
Again, both AI is great for spotting patterns. So in terms of fraud monitoring and prevention, it's great. Putting AI in charge of conducting your payments is probably not necessarily where you want to go.
Absolutely. I think I hold this same opinion. And I think at least I feel that AI is the corporate buzzword of the decade, at least. That's my perception. And everybody wants it. But what they overlook is the good data. And I feel that AI without clean, structured, and well-managed data is just an expensive guessing machine. So like you said, Christian, that if you know that this is the high impact use case and you are prepared for it, then that is the sweet spot to use AI rather than just trying to fit AI into every possible business case.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us today and providing your insightful thoughts on this very timely topic.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Subscribe now so you never miss an episode. We can't wait to share these exciting conversations with you.